Happy Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler. I'd like to welcome all of you to the Michael Cutler Hour. Sorry, we didn't have the startup music in the queue. Sometimes we have technical difficulties, but I presume the rest of the program will go smoother. I hope you've all been enjoying the Christmas holiday, the New Year's holiday. We're now off to a fresh year, new start, an exciting year, hopefully an eventful year for the right reasons. We have an election coming up, obviously, in November. A lot of political battles being fought, a lot of stuff going on. But, you know, my area of expertise, my area of concern is what's happening or not happening where border security is concerned, where immigration enforcement is concerned. Because let's face it, the immigration issue is not a single issue, but it's an issue that really influences and impacts every challenge and threat that our nation faces today. Last week, in fact, this week as well, but last week when I was on with Neil Cavuto, pardon me, and it's always a delight to join Neil on the air. He's a good talk show host, does a great job. Neil asked me about jobs, and I said, you know, with all this talk about creating jobs, why is nobody talking about the need to liberate jobs? And he said, well, how do you liberate jobs? And I said, it's relatively easy. All you have to do is enforce the law. That's basically the story. Enforce the law, and then things move along the way they're supposed to move along. He seemed kind of surprised, but this is the topic that nobody talks about. And then this past week, I was, again, at Neil Cavuto's program, but this time, the week before, I was on the Fox Business Channel with him. This week, I was on Fox News, and I was on Your World with Neil Cavuto. And I was pleasantly surprised that sitting with me at that time in the green room was Herman Cain. Previously, he'd been, as you know, a candidate for the presidency. We talked about how dirty and nasty this whole process of selecting our leaders is, and he agreed. He told me that he had no idea what awaited him when he decided to throw his hat in the ring, as they say, and enter the race. And, you know, when I look at the food fight that we witnessed, whether you like Herman Cain or not, whether you want to believe the allegations or not, just watch the madness. It's a circus. It's a carnival act. It's a sideshow. This isn't dignified. This isn't the way that I don't think any country should select leaders. You know, when you look at the name calling and the whole business, you know that you're dealing with a situation that's reminiscent of what we did as kids in the schoolyard. You know, you'd be insulting some kid's mom or his dad or his long nose or his flappy ears, and a fist fight would break out, and we were kids. Well, I have to tell you, watching the campaigns, watching the debates, watching the allegations made by one candidate against another candidate, boy, oh boy, we're back in the schoolyard. We're back rolling around in the mud. This is not the way, in my judgment, and I think in other people's judgments, that does justice to anybody. And if you sometimes look at the candidates and think, gee whiz, where did we get these folks from? I'll tell you where we're getting them from. I don't think a sane, rational human being would want to put his family or himself through the process that's involved with a political campaign. I mean, this is ugly. It is demeaning. It is dehumanizing. This isn't about leadership. Could you imagine if corporations did this to CEOs who were trying to become the CEO of a company? You know, you're not going to get the best and brightest when you tell people that they've got to play some reality show, which is what these debates have turned into. I was watching the debate a couple of months ago, one of the very early debates. And for those of you old enough to remember it, you remember the gong show. I was really waiting for someone to get up and smack the gong and make some of these candidates disappear, because that's really what it looks and sounds like. It's about sound bites and snide remarks, insults. It's ugly. And I'm not sure how you fix it. I don't know how you replace it. But I almost think that anything would be better than what we're witnessing today. But let me start you out by telling you that for some time now, in the background, an ongoing problem has been investigated. And that's the way that we give out citizenship and residency to aliens. You know, with all the focus on the borders and whether or not we're going to build the fence, goodness gracious, I have to tell you, it gets really ridiculous after a while, talking about whether or not we should be building a fence, how tall the fence should be, how much electricity we should run through the fence. It's really pretty outrageous. Immigration is a lot more than a fence on the Mexican border. You might not know it listening to the politicians. You might not know it reading some of the newspaper accounts. But it seems as though when you talk about immigration, first of all, nobody wants to accept the idea that immigration is as important an issue as it is. In the debates, it's a side story. Okay, we're going to talk about national security. We're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about joblessness. And then they say, and now we have a question for immigration or about immigration. Well, let me tell you what, folks. Immigration is not a single issue, but a singular issue. Because if you have millions of people living in your country, in cities and towns from coast to coast and border to border, you don't have national security if you don't know who they are. You don't. During the Second World War, the Coast Guard, working with the FBI, picked up nine saboteurs. They came ashore in a submarine, a real World War II storyline, and it was for real. It really went down that way. They hid explosives. They were going to blow up factories because they wanted to stop America's ability to produce airplanes and guns and ammunition and so forth, and they were saboteurs, and there were nine of them. They were quickly put on trial. Within mere months, they were found guilty and executed, all but two, and a couple were naturalized citizens. They went back to the fatherland, as they called Nazi Germany back then, and came back here to do damage. Two of them were sentenced to prison sentences. One guy got life. The other guy got 30 years in jail, and the others were executed, all within months. Big headlines, FBI stops saboteurs. Now, let me be clear about this. I want to be 100% clear. The great majority of illegal aliens are not saboteurs, they're not members of MS-13, they're not part of the cartels, and they're not terrorists. But while we're talking about these huge numbers, if only a couple percent of the illegal aliens in our country are involved with sabotage, crime, terrorism, that's a huge number. And when you look at the hundreds of thousands of alien gang members in America, that's an incredibly huge number. So while, you know, you don't look at a guy and say, well, if he's an illegal alien, he's a terrorist, we don't know who that person is or why he came here or what he's up to. That's supposed to be the job of the federal government, a job that the federal government, for a whole bunch of political reasons, I suspect, is absolutely refusing to do. They're hiding behind this idea, well, if the alien is here illegally, but they don't have a criminal conviction, even if they go on trial, because presumption of innocence, you're not guilty if you're not found guilty, then we're not going to deport them. That's nuts. That's nuts. Go back to what I said on Neil Cavuto. If you want to get to this problem of unemployment, it's not just a matter of creating jobs, but liberating jobs. So just to say that we're not going to get rid of an illegal alien because he doesn't have a criminal history is crazy, because if that illegal alien is working, then that's a job an American could be doing. That's a job that an American could be doing, supporting his family, getting off of unemployment perhaps, and then not sending the money that he makes out of the country, which is the goal of most foreign workers. So to ignore the plight of the average American is nuts. It's a betrayal of the average American, and it shows a lack of compassion for the citizens of our country. But Governor Perry said, oh, if you don't want to give in-state tuition for illegal aliens, you have no heart. No, Governor Perry, you're the one lacking the heart, because apparently you don't care what it costs for an American kid to go to college, and you don't care that when an American kid does go to college, the cost of that college education keeps rising. And the expectation of gainful employment after college decreases, and so do the wages. So you have American kids with advanced degrees making $40,000 a year at a student loan that looks more like a mortgage payment than a student loan payment. And now we come to this story, and it's breaking news. I'm probably, even though I'm just doing this little internet radio program, one of the first people to be breaking the story. I just got an email from Senator Grassley's folks, and I've been working closely with the senator. And I'm going to tell a tale out of school. About a year and a half ago, I guess it was, I was contacted by a staffer at Senator Grassley's office, and he's been doing a phenomenal job. I am proud to see him in the Senate. I hope he remains there. He is an important voice. He's the guy behind the disclosures about Fast and Furious, along with Daryl Issa over in the House of Representatives. He is the whistleblower's best friend, Chuck Grassley from Iowa is. And they contacted me because apparently there were people working in the service center, USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, and they were having a serious problem. And the problem they were having is they were being ordered to approve applications for citizenship and residency, even when they knew it wasn't right to grant citizenship and residency. Think of how crazy that is. Up until a couple of decades ago, when an alien wanted to naturalize, we did background investigations, not a background check, which is what we hear about now. Background check is almost worthless. You actually had agents go out into the streets, knock on the doors, interview a neighbor, show them a photograph. If the guy had multiple identities and that came out, the guy had a problem. If the neighbor said, well, yeah, we know Charlie Smith. He seems like a nice enough guy, but on Friday nights, he comes home from work with that paycheck, and he goes to the bar, and he gets drunk, and he hangs out with hookers, and then he comes home, and he slaps his wife and kids around and kicks the dog. We wouldn't naturalize him. We didn't say, well, wait a minute, he has no convictions. You have a bunch of neighbors saying that the guy is hanging out with hookers, beating up his wife and children, and doing some other nasty stuff. We would say, oh, no, you're not of the caliber of person that we want to include in our society as an American citizen. And they had to provide witnesses that would be willing to come forward and under oath say, yeah, Charlie Smith is a good guy. I've known him for so many years that he never, you know, creates problems. If he borrows money from his neighbor, he returns it and so forth. Because we understood how special citizenship, especially American citizenship, is. Now, look where we've gone. We've gone from that situation to a case where under the Clinton administration, after the terrorist attacks of 93, and there were two of them, both cases, aliens gamed the visa process and the immigration benefits program to enter our country, hide in plain sight. And then one guy by the name of Kansi, a Pakistani national, January 93, after he got political asylum by lying on his application, he repaid America's kindness, generosity, and compassion by standing outside CIA headquarters with an AK-47. He opened fire upon the cars being driven into the compound by CIA officers reporting for work. He killed two, wounded three others, fled the country, which is what international terrorists, transnational criminals can do. They have an escape hatch. They leave the country. They go back home. But in this case, the crime was so egregious, our guys tracked him down. We brought him back, put him on trial, found him guilty, and executed him. But the people he killed remained dead. The people he wounded remained wounded. And a month after that attack, we had the first attack at the Trade Center. Six people dead, hundreds, perhaps thousands injured, a half billion with a B, in damages inflicted on the iconic World Trade Center complex. One of the towers almost came down sideways. Had that happened, instead of the horrific 3,000 figure for immediate casualties that we witnessed on 9/11, you might have had hundreds of thousands of dead bodies because the towers would have collided like falling dominoes. Probably the seawall would have ruptured, knocking out the tunnels that connect New York with New Jersey and Manhattan with Brooklyn. And what did the Clinton administration do? Nothing. In fact, they implemented a program called Citizenship USA where they ran about a million applications through the process faster than you-know-what goes through a goose. And afterwards, responding to complaints by the employees of INS back then, this is before they created the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I've come to call DHS, they found that thousands of these aliens who were given U.S. citizenship probably should have been deported. That's what citizenship now means in the United States. And then after the attacks of 9/11, you would think that they would say, wow, we had all these aliens, they came into the country, they gamed the process, look what they did. We're going to tighten up. No, the Bush administration did nothing. Again, here we go again. Both sides of the aisle, folks. It was Reagan who gave us the amnesty. Clinton, who gave us Citizenship USA, and then we have George Bush Jr., George W., where in, I believe it was 06, the GAO found that Citizenship and Immigration Services claimed to have lost 111,000 immigration files, 111,000, and those files all related to applications for a variety of immigration benefits, including U.S. citizenship, 30,000 U.S. citizens newly minted, and the people who made the decision as to whether or not to approve their applications weren't even given access to the files. Think about that level of betrayal, of incompetence, of mismal and nonfeasance. It was absolutely crazy. So that's the situation that we're in. And in fact, I've testified before congressional hearings about this lunacy. The first hearing I did, interestingly enough, or I hope you find it interesting, was in on May 20th, 1997, rather, and the topic of that hearing was immigration fraud and benefit fraud because of those 293 attacks. So we keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again. Well, about a year, year and a half ago, I got a phone call from one of Senator Grassley's folks, and I've testified with Grassley, by the way, before a House Judiciary Committee hearing in Iowa about comprehensive immigration reform. Pardon me. And what was amazing to me was that Senator Grassley had been contacted by people who worked for Citizenship and Immigration Services at the service center on the West Coast, and he was told that people were being removed from their jobs, including key people at high levels, people with many years of experience, decades of experience, people who were the managers, because they knew the law, they knew the regulations, and they said, you know what? The people that you want us to give green cards and citizenship to are ineligible. In some cases, they suspected fraud, which is a felony, by the way, if you lie on those applications. Purportedly, the director of the program said that there's no such thing as fraud, only misunderstandings. That's what I have been told was said to them. I spent a year as an adjudications officer when I worked for the INS. You know, my career spanned some 30 years. And the idea that the person running a program that gives citizenship, the keys to the kingdom, could say that there's no such thing as fraud, only misunderstandings, there's no integrity to a program like that, folks. And this is after the lessons that we should have learned from the 93 attacks and from the attacks of 2001. I'm just going to grab a cup of tea here. Wet my whistle or my vocal cords. And so what happened is that they actually were ordered to approve applications when everybody knew that they shouldn't have approved the applications. And I was asked, because the senator called a news conference and no reporters wanted to show up. Can you picture this? A senior senator, a United States senator, calls news organizations and says, you know, there's a serious problem. We know that there are people who are getting citizenship and residency and they're not entitled to it. And the people doing this are being ordered to provide these immigration benefits. There's a serious problem. I'm calling for an investigation. You would have thought that the reporters would have been beating down his door, that it's kind of like the old story about, you know, you throw a party and nobody shows up. And I reached out to somebody at 60 Minutes, CBS, you know, the Tiffany Network, I believe, is what they used to like to call themselves in the days of Walter Cronkite, the Tiffany Network. And after being stalled and BS'd by one of their key producers, and I won't give you his name, there's no point to it. If he's out there listening in that unlikely event, let him cringe. It's okay. He should cringe. He said, oh, this really isn't a serious matter, is it? And I was on a conference call with one of the people, because initially he said, you know, Mike, if you have an inside story, because 60 Minutes had reached out to me after 9/11, we want to hear it, but you got to get me someone on the inside. And I'm thinking, how am I going to get somebody on the inside? Well, now I did have somebody on the inside. An employee with more than two and a half decades of experience. And he said to me, is this really a big story? Is this really a big story? This is 60 Minutes, the muckrakers of the current era. and this dragged on for months. So you say to yourself, what kind of news are we really getting out there? And that's why I do this radio program, folks. You know I don't get paid for it, and I'm not crying on anyone's shoulder. I'm happy to do this. I'm happy that Tom Garcia worked this out for me. Tom is a former naval aviator, and he's now an American Airlines captain. And we've felt the need to do these programs, and that's why I'm here, because you're not getting this information anywhere else. Well, today, finally, just about an hour ago, and again, forgive my slight scratchy throat here, I got an article sent to me, a press release sent to me by a member of Senator Grassley's staff. And it was an article that talks about how they are finally going to release on Monday the GAO report, or the Inspector General report, rather, the OIG report, on just how terrible the situation at Citizenship and Immigration Services is. It's a scathing attack. It shows there is no integrity to the process. It's just absolutely unbelievable. And just to read what was sent to me by the staffer. Happy Friday. Today, members on the Hill will be receiving an embargoed copy of an Inspector General report entitled The Effects of USCIS, that's Citizenship and Immigration Services, Adjudications, Procedures, and Policies on Fraud Detection by Immigration Service Officers. This report highlights how immigration officers in the field feel undue pressure to approve applications for benefits, and how fraud is often overlooked in order to approve an application. It's a pretty stunning report. The IG will make it available to the public on Monday. And below is a statement that Senator Grassley is issuing today based on the draft report received from a whistleblower. And goes on and says, Senator Chuck Grassley today said that a draft copy of a report requested from the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General's office confirmed the accounts that he heard from whistleblowers about undue pressure being placed on immigration service officers to approve immigration benefits. A copy of Grassley's request for the Inspector General, as well as letters to Citizenship and Immigration Service Director Alejandro Mayorkas and Department of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, can be found here, and there's a link to that. And what Grassley then says, whistleblowers have been complaining for several years that leadership in Washington and immediate supervisors were placing inappropriate pressure on immigration adjudicators to simply find a way to approve benefits. Find a way. Can you imagine that word? Find a way. And we know this is a matter of national security. This get-to-yes attitude, how's that for a quote? In quotes, get-to-yes. No matter what it is, make sure you find a justification to approve. Doesn't serve the American people who expect a thorough and complete analysis. When a quarter of the Immigration Service officers felt pressure to approve questionable applications, and 90% of respondents felt they didn't have sufficient time to complete interviews of those who seek benefits, there are serious and widespread problems that need to be addressed by the department. This comes down to the safety and security of the American people, which should not be compromised by any means. The Inspector General took to heart the concerns he heard from Immigration Service officers, and he made some serious and thoughtful recommendations. I'm particularly interested in the implementation of recommendations by Inspector General to develop standards to permit more time for adjudicators' review of the case files, develop a policy to establish limitations for managers and attorneys when they intervene in the adjudication of specific cases, and issue policies that end any informal appeals process and the special review of denied cases. These get at the heart of the whistleblower's allegations and would go a long way to change the get-to-yes culture that prevails at the agency. Get-to-yes. It's remarkable that we have adjudicators who understood just how special, important citizenship is, being told that they're supposed to get to a yes. I mean, why don't we just issue green cards and citizenship certificates the way that they used to issue credit cards, you know? congratulations, you've been pre-approved. What I would love to see, ladies and gentlemen, is the day when immigration agents and adjudicators scrutinize aliens who want to come to America and want to remain here and get citizenship and so forth, when they are scrutinized the way that TSA scrutinizes 85-year-old women who want to get on board airplanes while they're sitting in wheelchairs. The outrage is that this government of ours seems to be more focused on providing benefits and opportunities to illegal aliens than they do to our own citizens. Abraham Lincoln very eloquently described America and our form of government as a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And we all repeat these things, like we repeat the Pledge of Allegiance. We've all heard that phrase, of the people, by the people. What does it mean? It means that the people who hold elected office in our country, right up to the president sitting in the Oval Office, are supposed to be looking out for us, we the people. How are they looking out for us when they're running people through the process that gives citizenship and the keys to the kingdom to aliens with a zero integrity to the process? But if you try to get on board an airplane, they will take your little nail clipper. I had an incident where I had a major argument over a 3-ounce bottle of aftershave lotion. Goodness gracious, you know. But we're giving away citizenship, the keys to the kingdom, to almost anybody who shows up. And then there was other news today that now the president is issuing an executive order that says, well, and if an alien is deported, then they can't come back for 3 years, maybe not so much. Or they can't come back for 10 years. Well, maybe we'll change that standard also. It is getting to the point that there is no reason for any alien who wants to come to America to get a visa when visas are required. And by the way, we could go off into another area. They just had a hearing before the House Immigration Subcommittee on the visa waiver program. And none of the people testifying were willing to get it there either. I was disappointed that I wasn't called to testify, but that's Lamar Smith's call and Elton Gallagher's call. Because this is an issue I've been hammering for the longest time. The visa requirement, when properly done, provides layers of protection for Americans, for American citizens. When an alien has to show up at an embassy or a consulate overseas to apply for a visa before coming to America, in a manner of speaking, we have pushed America's border out to that embassy or consulate. Because that's where they encounter their first American officials who tell them whether or not they will allow them to get on board that airplane to head for the United States. A visa is not a guarantee of admission, but it's kind of like a ticket that gets you in to see the inspector. And I spent 4 years as an inspector at the beginning of my career. When we eliminate the visa requirement, that important layer of security is removed. It also makes it more dangerous for the airlines. Richard Reed was the shoe bomber. He's the reason why we all take our shoes off before we can get on board an airplane. Richard Reed was a British national who did not need to get a visa before entering the United States. So our government has figured this out. You can conceal bombs in your shoes, and we're going to take care of that problem. But the fact that Richard Reed could get on the airplane without a visa hasn't changed. In fact, what's changed is now we've increased the number of countries who participate in this insane visa waiver program to 36. 36 countries. If you are in one of those 36 countries, you can just go to an airplane, go to an airport, buy a ticket. They run your name through a database, and away you go. When someone lies on a visa application, when the visa application is required, if they lie, they're committing a felony. If they're lying just to get to the United States, maybe to get a job, that felony carries a 10-year penalty maximum. if the crime of visa fraud was committed so that the alien could commit a crime here, maybe rob a bank or kidnap somebody, now the penalty is 15 years. If the crime involves narcotics trafficking, the penalty goes to 20 years. If an alien commits visa fraud to commit an act of terror or in conjunction with an act of terror, the penalty is 25 years. Boy, this sounds tough. But aliens who enter the United States under the visa waiver program don't fill out an application for a visa. So guess what? They can't be prosecuted if there's no visa application. The visa application also contains a lot of information in it. There's about 40 questions. So those questions, even if they lie on some of the questions, they're going to have to tell the truth on some of them also. Well, the truthful answers can become investigative leads. As an agent, I used to want to get my hands on those visa applications because they provided you with names, addresses, and so forth. Under the visa waiver program, we lose that also. So we lose all these benefits, and do you know why? Because every time there's an election, America goes to the highest bidder. The Chamber of Commerce, the travel industry, the hospitality industry, American manufacturing companies have all gotten together and created a program called the Discover America Partnership. Because the way they look at it is like this. The more people who get on board airplanes, the more money the airlines make. The more people who come to a city, the more they will need hotels and restaurants. The more they walk around a city or a town, the more they're likely to buy trinkets in those little souvenir stores that we've all seen. You know, where you buy the little snow globes. So everyone is saying, let's jam as many people as we can into those airplanes. Let's stuff the hotels with those folks. Let's get them out there so we can pick their pocket. The Discover America Partnership. Somebody needs to remind them that Al-Qaeda has already discovered America, but they don't want to hear that. So they've gotten together, and they make all kinds of campaign contributions, which I call bribes, by the way, because that's what a campaign contribution is, isn't it? A police officer or a federal agent is not allowed to accept a cup of coffee. God forbid that cop takes a hot cup of coffee or a hot cup of cocoa when he's out directing traffic and it's 5 degrees outside and the wind is howling and the snow is falling. And now we know if that compassionate shopkeeper hands that police officer freezing his tail off or her tail off on an intersection directing traffic or pounding the beat in the snow, boy, oh boy, if someone double parks in front of that guy's restaurant, maybe they won't give a ticket. Boy, this is a serious problem, boys and girls. But when folks who have deep pockets write checks for megabucks to the political campaigns, of course, we don't think the politicians are going to do anything for that money, do we? This is such hypocrisy, it makes me want to toss my cookies. I got to be blunt about this. So the Discover America Partnership keeps on twisting arms, keeps on insisting, let them in, don't slow them down, keep them coming, keep that line moving, and here we are. We now have somewhere between 5 and 10 million visa violators, people who enter the United States with or without visas, but they go through the inspections process, and it's in the millions. And guess how many agents are out there looking for those 5 or maybe 10 million illegal aliens? Well, if you haven't figured it out, I'll tell you, fewer than 300. And with Mr. Obama's policy, it doesn't matter if they're here illegally, because he has made it clear that unless you have been arrested and convicted, they have absolutely zero interest in arresting you. In fact, they've changed the detainer process. If an alien is being held in a jail and the alien is found not guilty at a trial, they don't care if they're here illegally. Immigration said, we won't take custody, so don't even bother. So the guy gets out of jail, and maybe he's a bad guy, and maybe he's going to commit more crime. We don't care. The fact that he ran the border, we don't care. The fact that he's going to take a job an American desperately needs, we don't care. We just don't care. And I want you to think about something else. And this is important, folks. We've all heard the expression that you only get one opportunity for a first impression. The first impression most people get of the United States are the way we enforce our immigration laws, the way that we secure our borders, because that's the body of law, the Immigration Act, that they generally encounter before they come here. We have now convinced the entire world that we don't care. You know, the driver's licenses for illegal aliens, I testified before the New York State Senate about that lunacy. Now, what did the members of the New York State Senate say? They're going to drive anyway if they're here illegally. So at least if we give them licenses, they'll drive safely and they'll get insurance. It's insanity. I sat at the hearing and heard the commissioner of motor vehicles say that driving is not a privilege. I sure as hell thought it was when I was a kid growing up. I'm sure you did too. But here is the commissioner for the Department of Motor Vehicles for the state of New York saying driving is not a privilege, it's a necessity. California won't impound cars driven by unlicensed motorists if that unlicensed motorist is an illegal alien. We have a two-tier system. And guess who gets the benefits and guess who gets left out in the cold? If you run our borders, if you commit identity theft, if you lie about your name, if you lie about your identity, if you violate the law by taking a job and do other things, you're wonderful because Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and President Obama want to make you a citizen. Now, if you're a citizen, on the other hand, or if you're an alien who is played by the rules, that's your problem. In-state tuition for illegal aliens, like our friend Mr. Perry wants to do. It looks like his campaign is crashing and burning, and I say bring it on, let it crash and burn. Because if you think it's a lack of compassion that motivates people to say, look, we're not going to give illegal aliens in-state tuition. They even have a bill before Congress to help the Immigrant High-Tech Workers Act that they're trying to enact now. Why are we not hearing about a bill called the Help American Citizen High-Tech Workers Act? I have plenty of compassion for folks, but this is absolutely crazy. You know, I have somebody joining me today, Mary Ann Davies. She's on the line. Let me bring her on so she can join the conversation.
Hello, Michael.
Mary Ann Davies, how are you, young lady? How are things going?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I am terrific. I don't know if you were listening, but I've been ranting and raving because Chuck Grassley just sent me a notice, his people, that I've been working with them for a year and a half. There's going to be on Monday an Inspector General report about how they are giving out citizenship to people and they're forcing the adjudications officers to quote-unquote get to yes. No matter what's in the application, you're an immigration lawyer and I want you to introduce yourself to the people, but I just want to tell you what I've been telling the audience out there. They're being ordered to get to yes. Fraud is only a misunderstanding, and we've got to take everybody who applies for citizenship and green cards and give them what they want. Well, on Monday, the report is finally going to be made public. I think it's something like a 40-page report. I think you're going to be amazed when you see this. And when Chuck Grassley initially contacted me, he couldn't get a single reporter to attend a news conference he held to discuss this a year and a half ago. Can you believe that?
I believe it. I mean, the Obama administration wants to sweep this under the rug. They're doing it under the cover of night. They don't want people to know what's really happening.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
That's the bottom line. I mean, while he tries to pretend that he's talking tough about the border, nothing has really happened. The numbers that they're claiming that they have record deportations is false. In the meantime, you know, he granted administrative amnesty, and now this. Now pushing, you know, all
now
the
this.
Applications that are in the pipeline without real
integrity,
you know, investigation or even scrutiny, and once again weakening our national security. That's the bottom line.
Why don't you tell everybody who you are? Because we're doing this bass backwards.
Well, I'm Mary Ann Davies, and you and I go a little ways back. Certainly,
yeah.
you have been in this world for quite a long time,
and I have the privilege of
meeting you through my activism on this issue since about 2006.
Yep.
So I was part
you,
of the,
you were with you Don't Speak for Me initially, right?
Yes, a charter member of You Don't Speak for Me.
And why don't you tell folks what You Don't Speak for Me is, first of all?
Well, it was a group that kind of came together from across the country of Hispanic Americans who were against the amnesty and against the marches, the national marches that happened in Los Angeles and New York and Chicago of basically illegal aliens plus their institutional supporters, the SEIU and a whole bunch of other nefarious groups around the country that were pushing for, you know, just blanket amnesty as a solution to our immigration and border security problems. And also because the narrative at that time, they got a lot of press, was that, you know, all Hispanics in this country are for amnesty and against enforcement of our immigration laws. And certainly there was quite a few of us that realized that's absolutely a false narrative. And really, we felt that, you know, it's not racist to say that we want to enforce our laws. In fact, it would be racist to paint us all with a broad brush and assume that if you know, because of our heritage, that we would be against enforcing the laws of this country. So,
and by the way, you are
together,
Hispanic, yes?
Pardon me?
And you're clearly Hispanic.
Yes, I'm a daughter of immigrants. I'm a first-generation American. My parents came here from Quito, Ecuador, more than 50 years ago. You know, proud naturalized citizens. My father served, you know, proudly in the U.S. Army. He served during the Korean War. You know, I'm a military mom. I have a son in the one of the service academies. And
awesome.
You know, we live the American dream, and we respect the laws of this nation. And we
and you're an attorney, and you're an attorney besides.
And I'm a lawyer as well. Yes, mother of four.
Let me ask you a question, because I raised this issue, and I want to throw this at you. I don't know if we talked about this earlier today. I know you're having situations going on at home. I hope your father-in-law is doing okay this evening.
Thank you.
You know, I was with Lou Barletta, formerly the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, where I was the final witness at the Hazleton trial when they were sued by the ACLU for daring to try to enforce immigration law. What a novel thought. Whoever thought it would come down to this, by the way. But he's now a congressman, and he and I spoke at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And one of the people in the audience asked me the inevitable question, and you know how it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Won't enforcing immigration laws lead to profiling? And, of course, lots of illegal aliens in the United States are not Latino. They come from Europe and Asia and Africa and you name it. But the bulk do come from Latin America, admittedly, because of geography. We share a border with Mexico. But this isn't about race. The immigration laws are blind about race, religion, ethnicity, and so forth. I couldn't enforce the laws if they weren't blind as to those issues. But here's what I said, and you tell me where I'm getting this wrong, or if maybe I'm not getting it wrong. I had said that using profiling appropriately, not to play out a prejudice or some hard-headed stupidity, which should get anybody who does that in front of a grand jury, not just fired from a job, but if you do it properly, then it's a good law enforcement tool. I said, but you know who profiles all the time? They get away with it, and they generally scream the loudest about profiling, and that's the journalists. And I said, look at what goes on when people, and look at these Sunday talk shows, the pundits will come on and talk about the demographics of voters, and you hear it all the time, and I'd love to know your reaction when you hear things. I know how I react when I hear about the Jewish vote. I am Jewish. How do you know who I'm going to vote for because I'm wearing a Jewish star? How does anyone know who Marianne Davies is going to vote for when they find out that she's a Latina? Isn't that profiling? Isn't that bigotry? Isn't that harmful to the democratic process to point the finger at somebody and based on race, religion, or ethnicity, make presumptions about who they would vote for and what's important to them?
Well, of course, and that it just really exposes the hypocrisy of that argument of the organizations, the national organizations, and you know the profiteers of illegal immigration, which you know some are in the business lobby, some are the trade unions, some are the you know ethnocentric groups, and you know it works when they're arguing that point, but then again they're the one they divide the world into. You know, ethnic groups as well. So, I mean, they're doing exactly what they're accusing the other side of doing, and only when it serves their interest, which is basically, you know, they argue against enforcement of our laws that it's racially profiling to ask for an identification at a mere traffic stop. Whether you know that's a routine matter of you know law enforcement. I mean, you know that more than I do,
yeah.
But. You know, you stop someone for, you know, motor vehicle violation, you know, taillight is out, what have you. The first thing that any law enforcement officer does is ask for an identification. It has nothing to do with whether or not, you know, you're brown, black, white, whatever.
How does somebody even know if
get.
The car
I mean,
is a stolen car or not?
Exactly. The laws, for example, you know, SB 1070 in Arizona and the similar laws that are being proposed or passed in other states, It is not giving them license to say, I'm going to stop, you know, people who may look like they're from south of the border for some other reason. The bottom line is that they're allowed to ask for immigration information or run identification through a database when they're otherwise stopping someone for some other issue.
Have you ever been profiled, quote unquote? You're
no.
a Latina.
No.
And if someone challenged you and said, you know, you look like you might be from Latin America, I'd like to see ID, would that disturb you?
No, because I had to show an ID to register my children at school. I have to show ID when I got a library card for my four children. I have to show ID when I, you know, check into a hospital or
right.
go into you know, into the mall and rent a stroller. So
yep.
I really don't have a problem with that.
Isn't this crazy stuff? And, you know, the other sad thing, and I think this does happen, is that people within the immigrant communities have it hammered into them that anybody who wants the borders enforced is a racist, so then they wind up feeling that those of us, you, myself, and others, oh, they must hate us. You know, it almost becomes like a I don't want to say self-fulfilling prophecy, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this,
well,
to
again,
me...
Well, again, it's hypocrisy. It's hypocrisy, Michael, because at any one of those... You know, the people that are complaining about that issue, you know, again, if you look at their, let's say, their country of origin, Mexico, for example, Venezuela, their borders are quite secure. The southern border of Mexico, people don't just run that border. It isn't, Mexico's northern border is more open than their southern border. And so I think, you know, again, it's a lot of hypocrisy. You know, they were having a problem with, you know, really the brutality of how they treated, you know, Mexico, for example. The government of Mexico treats those individuals that come from Guatemala or whatever to cross they cross through the southern part of Mexico really to begin their journey to come through to the United States. But they are brutalized and treated really inhumanely by the Mexican government.
Well, I've heard
of stories
of shootings.
They have the audacity to complain about us.
I've heard stories about people being shot and so forth. But, you know, I have a theory. And my theory is that they don't want the Guatemalans not to go to Mexico, but not to ultimately make their way to the United States, where they then compete with Mexican aliens working in our country.
Well, and also, I mean, right now, I mean, you know, and you know more of this than I, but, you know, the whole trade in the trafficking of persons, of illegal
yep.
immigrants,
mm-hmm.
Is now really run by the cartels.
Yep.
And they're warring against each other,
yep.
You know, and, you know, in El Salvador, in Guatemala, in Mexico, and it's controlled by the cartels.
Yep.
It's a very
Well, the cartels
and
the gangs
thing.
Like MS-13 are vying for control of a very lucrative business, and that business is getting across our borders that we won't even secure.
Well, you know, it makes a lot of money. I mean, $20 billion a year is transferred tax-free from the United States to Mexico
yep.
To their economy. And,
well, you know, I'm doing
a
piece now. I'm doing an article for The Social Contract. I've done a series. If you go to The Social Contract, you can see a couple of articles I've written. I've written about crime and immigration and the last Immigration Reform and Control Act of 86 under the Reagan administration. My new article will deal with the economics of it. By the way, while we talk about stuff I write about, I got to put a plug in for my friends over at CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They're a wonderful organization. I'm proud to be a senior fellow for them. I'll be traveling to California, in fact, at the end of the month to participate in some speaking engagements out there. I'm very much looking forward to seeing them and Concerned Women of America. They're doing another event where I'll be speaking. So please go to the CAPS Web website. That's capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And, of course, my website is Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Is there a website or an organization that you want to plug before we forget? Because we always run out of time when I do interviews, especially with someone who's as knowledgeable and fun to talk to as you are, Marianne.
Well, a couple. First, the Tea Party Immigration Coalition.
Right.
We are a coalition of, I think, about 40 different representatives of about 40 different Tea Party organizations.
Very good. In fact, I advise that group. That's right.
Who are concerned about the issue of immigration and want to bring it, make sure it's front and center, not only in the local state legislatures, but also in our national elections, in particular our presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that issue is firmly addressed. And, you know, the good thing is that this time in the last few debates, it has been brought up every single time. I can't remember that the last time in 2008.
Only one question in 2008.
Pardon
me? 2008, I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name from CBS. He came on and said, boy, I've never had more emails than I've gotten about this issue, so here is a question. And I
right.
almost fell over. I said, a question,
right.
but you've got all those emails? But you know what's wrong with the coverage now? They treat it as a separate topic. And I just said that at the beginning of the program. They'll talk about unemployment. They'll talk about crime. They'll talk about national security. And then they say, and now we have a question about immigration. Don't you agree with me that immigration is a major factor in every one of those challenges and threats that we're facing?
It absolutely is. We cannot, you know, none of those candidates should be talking about job creation without also discussing the fact that if they pass a simple law like you know, a real E-Verify law, that we would open up about 8 million jobs.
Yep.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, illegal immigration affects every single aspect of our economy, of our national security, of our state expenditures regarding education, regarding health care.
Yep.
So it is not a separate issue in and of itself. It certainly affects the major issues that our country is extremely concerned about at this point.
Yep. You know, there is an E-Verify bill. Of course, the issue I have with Lamar Smith's bill, as you know, is that it would preempt the states, and I don't think that that's a good idea because I don't think this is...
Right, that was problematic. That was definitely problematic.
Well, to me, it's a showstopper. It goes beyond problematic because
sure,
even if they pass E-Verify with this administration, I expect them to take no action to implement the measures.
Yeah, I don't believe this administration. I mean, President Obama is not going to sign any kind of E-Verify bill. He will not.
No, I think he would not sign it, just not do it, just assign, you know, six people to it and say, okay, we're now doing it, and use it as a headline. And use it as a headline, say, see that, we're doing the right thing. And meanwhile, you make sure that nothing happens.
What's the point if the Department of Justice isn't going to enforce it anyway? So they find people that are, you know, are going to be let go because they were unable to meet the requirements and prove their status. They're no longer employed. So what? They're still here, and, you know, the Department of Justice isn't going to do anything about it. They've been told not to.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, they have what's called silent raids. I just did a hearing about this last year. I mean, you have to really go crazy when you hear this. A silent raid, folks, means that the employees of the company being audited don't even know that there's an audit taking place. You know, before they passed the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 86, which was the amnesty of 86 under the Reagan administration, 99% of our efforts as agents, the efforts were focused on the illegal alien. You'd go into a factory and you'd arrest 48 illegal aliens, you would drive off with them, and the employer would make a phone call, and 3 hours later a van would show up with 48 more people, and he'd put them to work. And we said, this is crazy. So finally, when they passed the Immigration Reform Act, it was supposed to give balance. So now you could go after the employers as well as the employees in theory, but that was only a theory because we never had the resources. You know, they never even really provided the appropriate training to identify counterfeit or altered identity documents, which were actually the linchpins that hold that whole program together. And now we have gone in the opposite direction altogether. The employers get hammered, but the illegal aliens aren't touched because the president says, well, if you haven't been convicted of felonies, we have no desire to remove you. And now, I don't know if you saw this, but they want to allow aliens to return to the United States more quickly, even if they are deported, provided that they have a spouse or child or somebody in the United States so that they can take care of them here in America rather than saying, look, if you want to be with your mom or your dad, you can go back to their country.
Yeah, basically,
remarkable, isn't
I mean,
it?
It was an administrative amnesty, and that's exactly what's going on right
yeah.
now. I mean, if they pass the E-Verify law right now, it really would mean sanctions for the employers. The illegal immigrants will not be touched. They will
yep.
not be deported.
Yep.
And destroyed, so they remain. They'll go find a job elsewhere, and there's apparently still plenty of employers who will hire them.
And then on some occasions, they go after employers when they shouldn't be, and I had helped in a case. You know, one of the things I do is expert witness testimony, and it blew my mind. There was a case out in Hawaii. I won't mention the company, but I really thought it was a miscarriage of justice because as a private person, I do what I want, what I think is right. And I'm not going to help a defense attorney if I believe that his client deserves to be prosecuted. They had a bunch of illegal aliens who had phony ID. They flew them from California to Hawaii. Their ID was good enough to get them past TSA, and the employers had filled out all the paperwork, the I-9s. They were paying prevailing wages. In fact, when their housing was broken into, the employer called the police. If you think you're harboring illegal aliens, you're not going to call the police. So, you know, there was nothing about this case that convinced me that the employer had an inkling that the people they had hired were illegal. You know, imagine the guy shows you a green card, he gets on an airplane, TSA lets them go. You have to presume these are good documents. And they charged these people in 15-count indictments each, the two farm managers. And I looked at this and I said, you know what? This is a miscarriage of justice. You know, our country has gotten so far away from this idea about what justice really is. And now, of course, I'd be curious about your take on this new funding bill for the military, which I guess eliminates posse comitatus, where you can now have the military operating within our borders, declaring the United States to be part of the battlefield. I'm sure you've been following this.
I have, and I'm just frightened at really what I feel is aggressiveness and contempt for our military by this administration.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, just weakening our national security to the point where, I mean, who announces that we're going to have a leaner, meaner, less, you know, troops on the ground as one of our biggest enemies, the nation of Iran, is preparing warships, and, you know, Ahmadinejad is coming to our backyard in a few weeks.
Explain what that means.
Excuse me?
Explain to my listeners what that means, Marianne.
Well,
when you say our backyard, where is he showing up?
He's doing a five-nation tour of, and this is not the first time, but he's coming in a few weeks. Again, he's going to Venezuela, he's going to Ecuador, he's going to Bolivia and to Cuba.
And you know, he hasn't shot
And now
troops.
We have a new embassy open in the nation of Ecuador, an Iranian embassy, and has established over the last 3 years very strong ties with Venezuela and with Ecuador. There are two leftist presidents. They, you know, are openly hostile to the United States. In fact, there was just a problem with our diplomatic corps in Ecuador, and they've invited the Iranians. They've opened up already a new embassy there.
Do you know that they have Iranian shock troops stationed in Venezuela as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's no surprise. I mean, and Iran is now investing heavily. They're opening trade with Iran. And, you know, there's been, you know, Hezbollah has been a presence in Latin America for a while. Now it's going to be even worse.
That's the tri-border region between Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay.
Yeah. And they're there, and they're coming in our backyard. Now Ahmadinejad is so emboldened that he himself travels there. You know, he didn't do this. As far as I know, he didn't do this during the Bush administration. He's
right.
Done this now. And that just shows how emboldened they are and how little they think of the United States. We look weak in their eyes. I really,
well,
you know, and they know that our border is a joke.
The border's
a joke.
There was just an article.
Years and they haven't done anything.
And, you know, there was an article in the Washington, I think it was the New York Times, actually, where, believe it or not, you know, the American dream, in my view, and probably your view, was that in America, no matter where your family was on the socioeconomic ladder, or even where you were, tomorrow could always be a much better day. You could always get that job, get that education. With a little bit of luck, a little bit of success, you could be the next success story. They're now saying that in the United States, if you're poor, the likelihood that you're going to get out of poverty is basically a goose egg. And in Europe now, people living in poverty have a far better opportunity to be elevated into the middle class than in the United States. I mean, how tragic is that?
That's very tragic because we you know, this is what attracted, you know, so many people from every single nation in the world. It was opportunity, the opportunity that's open to everyone. You put a little elbow grease, you work hard, you study hard, you can do something, you can move up in this world, in our nation. And now it's not the case. I mean, they're telling my generation that, you know, we may be the first generation that isn't going to, or our kids are going to be the first ones that are not going to be able to live or do better than their parents. And that is sad. I mean, up until this point, that's always been the case. Even if you were, you know, your successful parents, you know, affluent, live in an affluent place, the children still always did better. I mean, it didn't matter. I mean, that was just the natural progression. And now, for the first time, we're seeing that that's not, maybe not going to be the case. That's,
well, you know, the Air Force used to have a wonderful slogan, aim high. I guess Americans are supposed to aim low. I mean, this is absolutely a disaster. But what I want to know, folks, is this, because we only have a couple minutes left. If you're listening to the program, and I hope you have been listening to my program over the past few months, because I, you know, I love coming on Fridays and chatting with my audience, please, I beg you, I urge you, whatever it takes, get involved. Call your elected representatives. Make them understand that not only won't you vote for them if they don't turn things around, but you will work to get anybody who opposed them elected. We need to make politicians accountable. If you ran a business and your employees were driving you into bankruptcy, you would fire the employee that was responsible. The guy that's taking the two-hour lunch break, coming to work 45 minutes late, leaving early, and stealing stuff out of the supply room, you would fire him. Well, folks, I think I've just described most of our Congress. I've certainly described this administration. We need to make believe we are Donald Trump. We need to go into that election in November and get rid of those people that we believe are not working in our own best interests. But before that day, please reach out to the candidates. Reach out to the people that want to be president. Reach out to the congressional candidates. Reach out to the people who are in office now. When you go to a restaurant, I'm sure you're very specific about the food you want to eat, the way you want it prepared. We need to be no less specific and no less demanding on these people whose job is to represent us. Out of fairness to them, they can't represent you if you're not placing your order. You need to be very clear about this. Don't let them bamboozle you. Don't let them say, oh, I'm voting for a border fence. You know, really learn about the issues. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Please go to the capsweb.org website. Educate yourself about the issues. And then hold these politicians accountable. You know, I always like to say that democracy is not a spectator sport. And that's the way we hold them accountable. You're now part of Kitchen Table Patriots. Is there a website for that organization?
Yes, kitchentablepatriots.org. And we are actually going to be having we're hosting the Senate, the candidates for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania on January 19th. And this is definitely an issue that we will bring up. And we hope that the people that attend that forum to listen to the candidates for U.S. Senate bring the issue up as well. I'm interested in hearing more than just the basic talking points. I want to hear in-depth answers to in-depth questions. I don't want to hear, let's secure the border first, and then we'll deal with the rest. That's been said and done the last time. It means nothing, and they've done nothing. I want the meat and potatoes, and I want to know where they stand.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Marianne Davies.
Thank you.
Well, I have to tell you, it's always a joy to chat with you. You know, we are old friends. It's hard to believe it goes back about 6 years since we started working together on these issues. I've been at it forever. That's why I have all this gray hair. I'm really 12 years old with a lot of gray hair. I started working for the old INS way back October 1971. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
Scares the heck out of me, let me tell you. It's very dark. You know you're getting old when the guy who's the agent in charge of the New York office is the son of somebody you worked with. What does that say, you know? But that is actually the case. Jim Hayes, who's the SAC, the special agent in charge of the New York field office for ICE, and in fact presented me with a plaque a couple of years ago, his dad and I worked together.
Wow.
So you know you're getting old when, but, you know, it beats the alternative, and I haven't aggravated my quota yet anyway.
No, you're a well-seasoned. It's not old. It's well-seasoned.
Okay. Then I'll go along with that. Pass the Tabasco sauce. But, you know, it's really important that we do this, folks. You know, Marianne was kind enough to volunteer to come on my show tonight, and I do this every week because I am determined, having lived through 9/11 here in New York, having conducted investigations into some heinous crimes, whether it was kids that were sodomized by illegal aliens. We had one where the guy was a citizen of Great Britain. You know, this isn't about racism. It's not about ethnicity. I've arrested people from the four corners of the planet. I didn't care about race, religion, or ethnicity. What I did care about is the law. And it's time that our politicians showed that kind of concern for the law, too.
Yes.
Well, Marianne, I'm going to wish you and yours a good weekend. I hope things are okay. I know you guys are walking on eggshells this weekend.
Yes, yes, we are. Thank you so much, Michael. And thanks for having me. You've done a tremendous amount of work over the years, and certainly your voice is absolutely needed, your knowledge, your experience. More people need to hear you. I wish that you were in the administration because they need to hear you. They need to hear what you've seen and what your opinion and your testimony. It's powerful. And, you know, you're on the field. You've been there. You've seen it. And I think it's an important voice, and I'm so glad that Neil Cavuto has had you on the show, that you've been on Lou Dobbs, as have I, and on many of the programs. And I hope that they keep inviting you back, Michael, because we need to hear this part, about the aspect about the national security, a part of this. It's frightening to me. Again, I feel like it's a perfect storm. We have, an administration that seems to be openly hostile toward our military, who is really unconcerned about our borders, and who is ignoring the threat from Latin America.
It's very, very disturbing. You're right. I mean, these are issues that concern me tremendously. Not to overstate it, but this is the stuff that keeps me awake at night.
I can imagine.
I've been involved. I've worked on terrorism investigations. I had a desk at the FBI for a number of years. I worked intimately with the DEA. I had a desk at DEA Intel for 4 years. I was the first agent assigned to DEA intelligence back in the 80s. And back then in New York City, something like 60% of the people we were arresting in New York City for drug trafficking and related crimes were foreign-born. And you look at that, and you look at the so-called war on drugs. And, before we close out, I just want to make a point. I'm ready to write a piece that I want to call The Other White Powder. With all this talk about war on drugs, gosh, wherever you go, war on drugs, the food police are concerned about too much salt in the French fries and too much sugar in the dessert. I'm waiting for the day that a kid gets arrested for bringing a salt shaker to school in his lunchbox that actually has salt in it. But
yeah.
When was the last time any of us saw a commercial on television warning especially young people of the perils of becoming addicted to cocaine, heroin, crack, methamphetamine, marijuana, whatever? War on drugs. I've had friends killed doing narcotics investigation. Everett Hatcher was a DEA agent who, and I believe it was 1989, February 28th, was shot to death doing an undercover drug investigation in Staten Island by a mobster by the name of Gus Faraci. I was with Hatch 3 or 4 hours before he took 2 bullets to the head. I've seen other people that I've worked closely with get killed. Hatch was a good friend. In fact, ironically, the last time I saw Hatch, he was sitting at my desk up at DEA Intel with his feet up. I walked in. I said, "What are you doing here?" And of all the things he could have said, he said, "How would you like to trade jobs?" Neither of us could have imagined that he would be dead just a couple of hours later. So we talk about this war on drugs. Right now, while I'm sitting in my home, and I presume you're sitting in your home, comfortable and relaxed, I can tell you that there are agents and police officers out there in communities across the country putting their lives on the line, putting in long, thankless hours, conducting narcotics investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, not a word from the television, not a word from the radio, telling our kids about the dangers. But what they are watching are pharmaceutical commercials telling them that no matter what's wrong, there's a chemical, there's a substance you can shove into your body to solve the problem. Never mind your eyes may pop out of your head. Never mind that your throat may swell up. Never mind that you may croak. If you take this stuff with these fancy names, and these are prescription drugs supposedly, all's well with the world. So you combine that message for kids who are latchkey children who come home from school, there's no adult there to supervise them. The commercials are clear. There's some chemical that you need to take to solve problems. The pushers are out there trying to entice them. But where are our government officials to send a clear and consistent message to warn them about the perils that they face when they go near this garbage? We're using tons of this crap every single day. We probably use more cocaine and heroin in the United States than salt, sugar, and pepper. You know, I'd love to see if they would do an analysis like that.
Right.
But meanwhile, while they talk about too much salt on the French fries, no one's talking about the dangers of narcotics trafficking, because I have to believe that drug money is making its way into the political campaigns, and drug money is probably propping up what little activity there is in our economy. I think if you vacuum the drug money out of the real estate market, out of the stock market, out of the car market, there'd be no market. Shame
right.
on us that we've allowed this to happen to our country. Those of you out there who have never called a member of Congress, who've never called your city councilman, who've never written a letter, shame on you. You're getting the government you deserve. But the rest of us are kind of trapped. So please, if you're hearing this conversation today, folks, what I'm asking you to do is to engage those people in a conversation who allege to represent you. Be clear about what you want. Be demanding. Be civil. Absolutely be civil. You're going to lose credibility if you're not anyway. You don't want to do that. But my goodness, hold these people accountable. We are watching America evaporate before our very eyes, and I don't think that's an overstatement. Would you think that's an overstatement?
No, but I am a bit hopeful, because I think that people have risen up. And
yep.
Again, you know, the Tea Party is a phenomenon. People can say what they want about it, but you know what? It's been effective, and people are, you know, it got bad enough that people, you know, got off their couches and are doing something.
It's a vote for none of the above, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, right now, I mean, you know, I think it's going to be stronger than ever. I think that, you know, people are more frightened than they were in 2007 before the 2008 election.
Yeah.
And because things have gone from bad to worse, and on so many fronts, on so many levels, and people are pretty, I think, frightened.
They're frightened and they're angry, and they have every right to both. But please, if you're one of those like us who are angry, frightened, upset, disgusted, make it translate into action. Don't sit there. Don't whine about it. Don't kvetch. Don't tell your neighbor, oh, I'm angry. You know, in that movie Network, I'm mad as hell. Well, go to your phones. Go to your computer. Write a letter. Make a phone call. Make an appointment. Make your elected politician
accountable. Making an appointment and showing up. Yeah, showing up, Michael. I mean, you and I have done it. I mean, you just show up. You go to those offices. You don't get an appointment, you show up anyway. I mean, now, you know, they were so comfortable before, because most, you know, if you saw the guest books, I mean, I remember one of the times that I was a citizen lobbyist for the immigration issue. And I was in Capitol Hill with a lot of other people from all across the country. Most of us had never done that before. We had gone to a couple of the offices, and they have the guest books outside. And I could see that, you know, probably 90% of the people that had signed in to see some of these legislatures, they were all lobbyists, professional lobbyists.
Yep.
And there was maybe one person that was not, that was a constituent or identified themselves just as a constituent. And so up until, I think, the Tea Party started happening, you know, it was very comfortable for the congressional representatives and our senators to sit in Washington and know that their calendar was pretty much full with, you know, familiar faces, their lobbyists.
Yep.
they very rarely would have constituents coming in on specific issues. It usually was friendly faces that were coming in to visit. They were out of town, or they were coming for a ceremonial flag or something like that. Not
yep.
until the Tea Party did they realize that now they were going to have to be prepared to actually meet with constituents who had real questions and have to answer them. I thought that was beautiful. And now, you know, hopefully their guest registers are filled more with citizen visits than they are with lobbyists.
I agree. And, you know, if you look at the First Amendment, people always say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of the religion. Yes, absolutely. But you know what? It also has two more elements to it. The right to peaceably assemble and the right to seek redress of grievances. And that's important. The right to assemble peaceably or peaceably assemble goes back to the fact that at the founding of this country, the only way to have a debate, discourse, or discussion was live and in person. We couldn't have done this way. Back then, I would have had to get in a stagecoach or a wagon, I guess, and they didn't have stagecoaches back then, and make my way to Pennsylvania, and you would have had to head towards New York, and we'd have to meet somewhere in the middle and have a face-to-face conversation. So they talked about the need for peaceable assembly so that people could have those meetings and those conversations. It is as American as apple pie, folks, to go out there and have conversations with your neighbors. You know, they say don't discuss politics in polite society, don't discuss religion. Religion, that's fine, that's private, that's personal. Politics, we better have these conversations. They should be civil, but we need to have the conversations. We need to confront what's wrong. You can't fix something until you understand that it's broken. You don't know if it's broken until you do your homework and figure out what's going on. We know it's broken. Now we need solutions, and we need real leaders who are willing to stand up and provide the solutions. So please go to the websites. Go to the different sources of news. Don't take news from one source, because everyone, like it or not, we all have to admit, whether we mean to or not, everyone has a bias. But if you get your news from different sources, then hopefully the biases cancel out, and what's left is the residue of truth and knowledge. But, you know, I would love for you guys to visit my website, michaelcutler.net. Please, I ask you, go to the Californians for Population Stabilization website, capsweb.org. They do a great job. I'm going to be out in California at the end of January doing a couple of speaking events, one for them, one for CWA, Concerned Women of America. We've got to have this conversation, folks, and we've got to have enough spine that when someone says, oh, you're a bigot, that you explain, no, this isn't about bigotry. The most likely victims of crimes perpetrated by ethnic criminal groups, whether it's the Russian mob, the Mexican cartel, MS-13, Asian organized crime, the Jamaican posses, we can go on forever. The most likely victims are the immigrants of the same ethnicity. They're the ones who are greatest at risk. They're the ones who most likely are going to suffer violence at the hands of these international and transnational thugs. So when people say to you, oh, you're a bigot, don't be afraid of that. Stand firm and explain to them, no, I'm not a bigot. I just don't want people who run our border because we don't know why they're here, who run our border because they're fugitives, who run our border because they may want to perpetrate crimes, or they run our borders and take the jobs. And let's be very honest about this, folks. We have the right to be a little bit selfish. If you're a Latino and you lose your job to an illegal Latino, you're not going to be happy. If you're a white guy from Russia, or whose ancestry is Russian, as is the case in my family, my dad's parents came from Russia, my mom came from Poland. If I was in the job market and I was beat out by an illegal alien from that part of the world, it doesn't matter that the guy is from that part of the world. What matters to me is that I can't feed my family. This is an American issue. This business about hyphenating us is wrong. I might be an American Jew, but I'm not a Jewish American. This business about having that little hyphen between our ethnicity or our race and America, that's doing irreparable damage to us because we stop thinking as Americans. And that's what we need to ask, is what's going on in the best interest of our nation? Because if it's not in the best interests of our nation, folks, then it's not in our best interests, we the people. Would you argue with that as a Latina? Or as an American?
Well, I'll argue with that as an American. I'm not going to argue with that. I think, you know, that is absolutely correct. I mean, you know, I honor my heritage and where my parents came from, but...
As you should.
We're Americans.
You
so
betcha.
Are my parents.
You know, I got to tell you a funny story, and then I'm going to end the program. My father's father, for whom I'm named, my middle name is William, for my dad's name, and my dad's father, who was Willie, he was a Russian Cossack. He was a two-fisted character. My pop told me that one day when he was a young boy, he heard this big commotion in the back of the tenement where they were living. And he looked out the window, and there was his father sitting on his neighbor's chest, beating the snot out of this guy. He had knocked out his teeth and turned one of the guy's eyes into an eye. It looked like a golf ball. And they said, what the devil did you do? He said he called me a crazy Russian. He said, well, I may have come here from Russia, and I might be crazy, but damn it, I'm an American. That was enough to set my old grandpa off. And that's the point. Folks, we're Americans, and we better find those things that make us most similar and stop emphasizing those things that might make us different. At the end of the day, we are all Americans, and that's where the emphasis needs to be. And
well,
as all
you.
Americans, we have an obligation to ourselves, to our valiant men and women in the military, to the men and women in law enforcement, and the other Americans who live around us every day and put their lives on the line on our behalf. Please be the best citizen that you can be, and being the best citizen, think about the First Amendment. Think about seeking redress of grievances. Think about peaceably assembling and having these conversations. Making those politicians in Washington and in your state capitals and in your city halls accountable. They're getting away with this crap because we're not holding them accountable. That's the job that we have to do. Marianne Davies, I wish you a wonderful weekend. I hope things are okay.
Thank you so much, Michael. Thanks again, and have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, I thank you, as I always do on Friday evenings. I thank you for spending some time with me. I wish you a great weekend. Hope you have a wonderful time of it. But please get involved. Make certain that you make those politicians accountable. Don't let them get away with the nonsense. Hold their feet to the fire. And I hope to be speaking with you again next week at the same time. Meanwhile, visit my website, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org. But next week, I will look forward to speaking with you again right here at the USA Radio Network. Have a good weekend, everybody.